The next case on our calendar is 08-1036 and 08-1037, Henry HF and RF, minor children. Mr. Young.
Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court, my name is Joe Young. I'm the assistant prosecuting attorney from Cuyahoga County, appearing on behalf of the Department of Children and Family Services. I would like to reserve 3 minutes of time for rebuttal. This case becomes before the court today on an evaluation on a single issue, and that issue is whether the provisions of Appellate Rule 4B5, dealing with partial final judgments, have any application to juvenile child protection proceedings involving adjudication and original disposition. I would submit to the court that the answer to that question is no. Appellate Rule 4A generally prescribes a 30-day time limit for a party to appeal an entry once it is entered. As stated, there is a limited exception carved out in Appellate Rule 4B5 dealing with partial final judgments. It's important to note as background how that rule came about and why it was developed. There were a series of cases out of this court involving analysis of final appealable orders. Notably, the Amato versus General Motors case dealt with a class action certification, and they had to determine whether or not that was an appealable order. They set forth a balancing test that, as it turned out to be more confusing than helpful to a lot of litigants, and that is the reason a subsequent case out of this court entitled Dayton Women's Health Center versus Enix expressed in footnote form the desire that the Supreme Court Rules Committee establish perhaps an exception of the time to appeal those types of orders. Those types of orders, as contemplated by those cases, involved interlocutory final appealable orders. In other words, orders that were made in general civil cases involving multiple parties or multiple claims that were not orders resolving the issues before the court on their merits, but involved some ancillary proceedings or some decisions that didn't pertain to the heart of the matters. For instance, certification of a class action, or as the rule itself states, or some appellate treatises state, orders regarding discovery or other ancillary matters. The rule was established, and it did give guidance to general civil litigants in that regard. It did allow them to appeal final appealable orders of interlocutory nature, either at the time they were issued or subsequent to the time when the actual case itself was disposed on the merits. The thing that this court really needs to focus on in this case is that a juvenile child protection proceeding is unlike any other proceeding at law. It is not a traditional civil case. It is not a case involving multiple claims, multiple parties of cross-claim, counterclaim, et cetera. It was designed to serve the interests of the child. When you file a complaint, or when an agency files a complaint in juvenile court of this nature, there are basically two components to that complaint. The first is an adjudication. The child is alleged to be abused, neglected, or dependent. The second component is a dispositional request. In other words, if a court gets to the point where it does adjudicate a child either abused, neglected, or dependent, then the question arises, what should be done with the child in order to best protect that child from the present situation? The complaint asks for both of those requested reliefs. The matter proceeds through the court, and at the end of that contested proceeding, or in some cases non-contested proceeding, two orders emanate, an order of adjudication and an order of disposition. At that time, all of the claims relating to that complaint have been disposed of on their merits. Unlike a civil case, however, a juvenile child protection case just doesn't then go away and the books are closed. Because this is dealing with not a civil litigant claim for property damage or other financial remuneration, this deals with the life of a child, the juvenile court keeps that case active on its docket and pays attention to what's going on in the case to see what will happen to the child in the future. Because as you all know, there is no provision for a child to remain indefinitely for the duration of its minority in agency custody. The goal in all of these cases is to, as quickly as possible, achieve permanency for that child, either by reunifying with a parent or other family member, or in cases where that's not possible, finding an appropriate adoptive placement or other permanent placement. The fact that this court takes such a role in this child's life in order to correct the situation that is presented to it does not obviate the need of a parent or other party to appeal those original orders when they do become final orders.
That's where the conundrum comes in. I mean, we seem to have case law that says if it's an order that it's against a parent, that it becomes final and they can appeal it at that stage. But what happens when you have a parent cooperating, as in this case, and the parent, to get the treatment, to get the drug treatment and all these other aids to try to reunify with the child, agrees that the child is dependent, neglected, and agrees to some of these positions, and then goes forward with the treatment plan. So why would they even ever appeal when they're trying to cooperate with you? I mean, it goes against the whole system of what you do appeal and why you appeal. They have nothing to appeal. And well, so what you say is, well, because you didn't appeal that, now that you haven't complied with the court orders that we're going to take your children permanently away, you can't contest anything back there that you had no reason to contest because you were trying to cooperate to get the kids back. And it locks it in, and that's the conundrum I find myself in that seems to be inherently unfair about the whole process.
Well, there are 2 points in my response to your conundrum. First of all, parents may agree that the children are in need of care. That doesn't mean there's nothing to appeal, because if you take the other view as a parent's attorney or otherwise, or the parent themselves, the juvenile court has no ability to order removal or disposition unless there's a valid adjudication. So a parent who wants to have their child back in their home certainly does have a reason to appeal that final order, because if they feel that their rights were violated because the court forgot to mention one of the rights or forgot to clarify the impending results of the proceedings, they can take that appeal, and if successful, they will be entitled to go back and revisit that issue.
So your basic argument is that they can only appeal at the final adjudicatory stage if they also have contested something at the initial stage.
Absolutely not. They can agree to the adjudication, as was the case in here, and yet they can appeal the order if they feel that their rights were violated and that agreement.
But what would he have appealed here? What would he have appealed that was really an issue? What should he have appealed here to preserve his rights later?
Well, he should have appealed the adjudication if he felt that it was flawed.
But if he doesn't.
To further your argument, if he doesn't feel it's flawed, then why are we here at the end of the stage of the game? It's not his position it was flawed. It may be Mr. Garver's position.
Because you're using his admissions that were entered at a stage in time when life was different against him in the final. Why don't you just prove the case again in the final? Why do those admissions that deal with where he was in a very different point in time mm-hmm. become binding against him when a lot of things have changed?
Well,
it seems to me that the admissions should only be valid for that part and not be reusable. Maybe that's the bigger issue, is you can't reuse those admissions. You just have to prove your case at the final adjudication stage.
Actually, that's how it works, Your Honor. 2151.414 specifically states on a motion for permanent custody, the adjudication shall not be litigated. The adjudication and his admissions to the adjudication have nothing to do with the final action for permanent custody. They do not re-adjudicate
Didn't
that.
Did they use these admissions in this case? Isn't that what the...
No. What they did was they used the admissions to adjudicate the child, which gave the court the ability to place the child in temporary custody. At that time that order was issued, the adjudication and the original disposition were final orders. And if the father at any time wants to appeal errors in relation to those proceedings, he must do so at that time.
You're telling me that those admissions were not used in the final hearing?
Absolutely not. There was a contested trial which consisted of the facts that occurred since the original dispositional order. What they did was he participated in drug court, he entered admissions to an adjudication. The adjudication and dispositional proceedings in a juvenile court are bifurcated and they are not to overlap, and they're fundamentally different. Admissions at the adjudication involve factual circumstances that exist at the time the complaint was filed. That forms a factual determination as to whether a child is abused, neglected, or dependent. Those facts in and of themselves are not related to the disposition. Once you get beyond the adjudication, then you have to hear additional evidence as to what is in the best interest of the child. Can the child remain in the home of the parent notwithstanding those admissions? That is a very real possibility and often takes the place of the form of a protective supervision order where the child is not removed. In many cases, the child requires to be removed into temporary custody or another situation because it's not safe for them in the home. At that point, you move on. You have a reunification plan, as was done in this case. If things don't go according to plan, then the agency files a motion to modify the original order of disposition to one of permanent custody. At that point, new summons are served. The motion with the alleged basis for that motion is served on the party. They have a contested trial based on the facts that occurred since the original disposition. They do not rely on the father's admissions in proving a reason to terminate his parental rights. That's only where the case began a year or so before.
If they argue that you have reused the admissions, that would be, you argue, not true.
That's incorrect. It's just flatly incorrect. There's no evidence that that occurred in the record. In fact, I believe what happened is the father in this case failed to appear for the contested trials on the motion for permanent custody. Additional evidence was offered into the record to prove that motion, having nothing to do with the original complaint or the admissions entered thereto. Now, some of the permanent custody factors reference the original conditions, but not to the extent that they attempt to prove them again. They're only referenced as a guidepost. In other words, this is what happened at the beginning and what has happened since then. You have to have some measure, because the first factor under the E component of 414 talks about whether the original circumstances have been remedied. It doesn't seek to reprove them, but shows what happened since then. What did he do to correct his situation so the children could come home? And that is entirely different than relying on original admissions to prove the later motion.
But that's the basis of the Court of Appeals opinion, is that those admissions were not properly given, or those rights were not properly explained when he entered the admissions.
Okay, but the fundamental question before this court is, can the Court of Appeals entertain an assignment of error to the adjudication at all at the permanent custody stage? The only way they're able to do that is if they apply Appellate Rule 4B5, which I submit is inapplicable to these proceedings.
So your argument would be that at the first stage, when he made these admissions, he had to appeal the fact that all his rights were not properly explained then.
Right. Well, actually, not at the time of the admission, but at the time of the subsequent order of disposition of temporary custody.
He could say, yes, I made the admissions, but you never explained my rights to me in making those admissions, that those could be held against me in the future when I give up my child for good.
Well, there was compliance with juvenile. I don't want to get too far into the juvenile 29, because that's not our issue. I'd love to debate that at great length, because that's an issue I think is worthy of some attention. It's not the one before this court, but yes, the court did go through an explanation, and by way of anecdote, the drug court is a much more involved court than the traditional court. They meet every week. They go over a contract at which their rights are explained, and they initial them. In this case, in fact, if you look at the record, the father in this case signed off on a drug court contract where he acknowledged and initials each of his rights, including the fact that if he drops out, that the agency may seek to terminate his parental rights. That wasn't noted in the opinion of the 8th District, but that's really not before this court. I guess my point,
just to be really clear then, you're not, despite what the Court of Appeals says about going back to the admissions and the reading of the rights, your argument is that those admissions were only made for that stage, and you have reproved your case despite those admissions at the
absolutely
final stage.
Absolutely. I would submit to you that I would not stand here at any point and ever deny any party a right to appeal any type of error at the court. My only point is that they must take a timely appeal. Our discussion thus far has focused on the parents and their rights. What is really missing in a lot of these cases is the focus on the rights of a child who is an equal party to this case. These children have the rights to permanency. They certainly have the right to have alleged errors addressed in a timely manner, so they are not unduly punished.
Is your strongest argument that when the adjudication is made the first time and the court orders the temporary custody, that at that moment in time all the matters are resolved?
Absolutely.
There's nothing left for the court to do at that time, unless somebody files a motion, or there'll be a motion for permanent custody, perhaps. But it seems to be your strongest argument is that circumstance fits our test for a final appealable order.
Absolutely, and this court.
That's your simple argument, isn't it? I mean, isn't that what we have to decide?
You know, that's the crux of this issue. And if all of these other competing interests that aren't directly relevant to that issue weren't so attractive to discuss, I think it would be a very short argument, because this court has said in In re Murray, an adjudication followed by an order of temporary custody is a final appealable order. Those orders, in effect, determine the action. Because of those two statements, Appellate Rule 4B5 cannot apply because you do not have a partial final judgment. A partial final judgment talks about a case where the trial court has not disposed of all claims as to all parties. That's straight out of Appellate Rule 4B5. If you don't have either of those scenarios, you cannot apply Appellate Rule 4B5 to these cases to extend the time to appeal. And that is the end of the issue. Straightforward. Now, I understand that some jurists and some practitioners are a little bit hesitant to do it that perfunctorily because there are such important rights involved, and those are worthy of discussion. And again, I go back to my argument that I am not seeking to deny anyone any right to appeal an error at the trial court level. I just want to make sure that they're required to do it in a timely manner so that you don't have a situation where a child is penalized unnecessarily to their permanency. I can give you a hypothetical.
Your red light is on before the hypothetical. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
Time.
And appreciate your indulgence.
John. Mr. Garver.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice. May it please the court, counsel. My name is Jonathan Garver, and I represent the appellee, Cedric Finklia. This is a permanent custody case, the family law equivalent of the death penalty in a criminal case. And my client is the father of two children, and it is that relationship, the parent-child relationship, the relationship between a father and his two children, that the state is seeking to extinguish in this case. Because of the sanctity and unique status of that relationship in our society, this court has recognized that parents in permanent custody cases are entitled to every procedural and substantive protection the law affords. In this case, the Court of Appeals gave meaning to those words when it interpreted Appellate Rule 4B5 as allowing a parent in an appeal from a permanent custody award to seek review of due process violations which occurred during the judicatory stage. In In re Murray, this court held that an adjudication order accompanied by an award of temporary custody is a final appealable order. The issue presented by this case is whether Appellate Rule 4B5 permits an appeal from an adjudication order coupled with an order of temporary custody to be filed alternatively within 30 days after the award of permanent custody.
When the trial court entered its dispositional order, temporary custody order, what claims as to the parties remained pending?
Well, the very use of the word claims presents some difficulty here because of the unique nature of juvenile court cases as opposed to civil and criminal cases where that term is used commonly. In this case, the case remained open and active on the court's docket. There was much yet to be done. The court was supervising my client's participation in the drug program, and on July 18, 2006, the court entered orders pertaining to his participation in the program. Additionally, by law, the court was required to enter a support order. The court was required to journalize a case plan. And by law, the appellant was required to submit semi-annual administrative reviews of case plans. Moreover,
those don't sound like claims to me. This rule seems to me to be written for a different situation than one we have before us.
Well, I doubt very seriously whether the authors of this rule were specifically contemplating juvenile court at all.
I
think it is applicable for the additional reason, as the author in Ohio appellate practice said, you're looking at the original order. Is it in his words, excuse me, does it remain tentative and subject to revision? And the law of Ohio clearly provides that adjudication orders accompanied by an award of temporary custody are subject to modification. And I think for that additional reason, Rule 4B5 should be interpreted to allow an alternative appeal to an order of adjudication.
Mr. Garver, in your view, then, when would be the final date by which a parent or a party would be able to appeal? I mean, it seems that you're talking about the continuing jurisdiction of the court, putting it into the category of the B5, but what would be the final point at which an appeal would have to be timely filed?
When there's an award of permanent custody.
And your position is that everything in all the hearings up to that permanent custody award are open to discussion in that appeal?
Correct. That's not to say that each and every error would constitute reversible error, but certainly it's desirable for there to be appellate review of the entire proceedings for due process violations.
So, counsel, would you say that the initial order adjudicating the child dependent and neglected or abused could be reversed on appeal of a final order of termination of parental rights?
Absolutely. And I would like to point out that I think it's somewhat disingenuous for the appellant to argue that the admissions made in the adjudication are not being used in the disposition. The adjudication, which in this case was made on the basis of admissions that were improperly accepted, is a legal predicate to the dispositional hearing. You don't get there at all unless there is that first adjudication.
So would the court then be required to maintain witness lists, for example, and the addresses of all the witnesses, all the evidence until the permanent custody order is made? Sometimes there's a year or two between the order of temporary custody to the agency and the time that the court finally adjudicates an order terminating parental rights.
Well, I believe, as a matter of fact, that all those records are maintained. And I think...
And the evidence submitted is also all maintained?
Sure. And it's part of the record in this case as well. The transcripts of those earlier proceedings, the exhibits that were introduced at those proceedings. And I think that the conclusion of the Court of Appeals in this case is not only consistent with the language of the rule itself, but it's consistent with well-established rules of construction. It's consistent with the purpose of the rules of procedure. It's consistent with this court's longstanding commitment to providing every procedural and substantive safeguard to parents in permanent custody cases.
So, counsel, would it be fair to say that you're saying that once the adjudicatory order is entered and then time passes and the final order or disposition terminating parental rights is put on, that the father in this case could only go back and challenge the adjudicatory hearing based on a procedural irregularity, based on, I guess, his lack of understanding or in some other deprivation of rights, not on the sufficiency of the evidence to have made that decision to adjudicate the child dependent, neglected, or abused?
Well, in this case, and this is the only case you're asked to decide today, we're dealing with errors of constitutional dimension, errors which really undermine not only confidence in the adjudication itself, but in the entire process.
You're arguing that he wasn't sufficiently informed that the statements he was making was going to ultimately turn, the case as to whether the temporary custody and then permanent custody would be the potentials here. Is that correct?
Well, there were two problems. One, he was not advised of his constitutional right to remain silent. But more importantly, instead of being informed of the consequences of his admissions, he was misinformed and misled by the trial court into believing that he was only giving up some parental rights on a temporary basis.
All right, let's say in the bigger picture, other cases, not just for your client, if someone decided that they wanted to challenge the sufficiency for the basis of the adjudicatory hearing and not on grounds such as those that are presented, you allege, in your client's situation, but on sufficiency of the evidence, for example, to adjudicate the child dependent, neglected, or abused. What you're proposing, I think, is that that whole discussion can be resurrected and reviewed once an order of permanent custody is made and can be done on appeal at that point. Is that what you're advocating here?
Well, I'm not advocating that here, but I think that's a possible consequence of the construction of appellate rule AB5, which I am advocating here today, and I don't think that's a bad thing. If there is insufficient evidence to support that initial threshold finding of abuse or neglect of dependency, I think that too ought to be a matter of great concern in the context of the state terminating a parent-child relationship. Now, lesser errors occurring in the trial court, the admission of hearsay testimony or what have you, could be dealt with on the basis of harmless error doctrine and various other rules of appellate procedure.
Would you say that there is the option to appeal immediately upon the adjudicatory disposition, or?
There is.
There is the option. So you'll recognize that is a potential, so you, the father or the parent, has the ability to appeal right then and there from the adjudicatory, or bide their time and do it at the dispositional hearing. Is that correct?
Correct. And that is often the case with Appellate Rule B-5. It presupposes the existence of an earlier option. And as I argued in my brief, there are institutional forces, institutional pressures, which discourage a parent from filing an appeal at that earlier juncture. And indeed, the Ohio Rules of Juvenile Procedure do not inform the parent that he has a right to appeal at that juncture. At that time, he's trying to work with the agency. He's trying to get his kids back. And a parent might very well conclude that, gee, if my child's in foster care right now, if I file an appeal now, it's going to be months or years before I even have a chance to get my child back. So, although that opportunity exists, I respectfully submit that it's really not a sufficient opportunity to guarantee due process and fundamental fairness in the proceedings.
So, Mr. Garver, under Murray, the 30 days from the date of the dispositional order, you can appeal. If we were to affirm, you would then also give the parent the opportunity to wait until permanent custody and then file an appeal.
That's correct. And another thing to consider, at the time the order of adjudication was made in this case, And I mean the order of adjudication coupled with the award of temporary custody. Who was advising this parent about what he should do? The attorney who sat silently as the court failed to advise him of his constitutional right to remain silent.
Those are interesting equitable arguments, but we still have the language of the rule, which says all claims were of all claims the parties disposed of. I mean, all these other arguments don't seem to me to go to that, to the words of the rule, which I think clearly was not intended for this situation, particularly in the context in which the rule, the other sections of the rule were directed at other issues. But I still don't understand. The claim is that the child is abused and neglected, and the court makes a determination that whether it is or not. The court says, yes, this child is abused, neglected. And that's a final judgment, it seems to me, as to that question. You don't change that sometime later by going back and saying, well, no, you missed some facts, court, or we have some new information that suggests that the child was not abused or neglected. That's really not usually the way final judgments work, is it?
I mean, in all due respect, Your Honor, first I would submit that I doubt very seriously whether the people who drafted that rule were thinking in terms of juvenile custody.
I think even cases. Though it's a reference to civil or juvenile, but it's not to this issue.
I think it's written broadly enough to be applied, because I cited numerous statutes which suggest that it really does not end the proceedings. The adjudication order coupled with temporary custody does not end the proceedings. The proceedings continue, and indeed the order of disposition, temporary disposition, is by law subject to modification. In conclusion, if I may, Your Honor.
Sure. Yeah, you're right.
I believe, in all due respect, that justice demands more than expediency and finality. And in a case like this, where fundamental rights are involved and where the stakes are as high as they are in permanent custody cases, I respectfully submit that confidence in the legal process as well as justice for the litigants demands that Rule 4B5 be construed to allow a later alternative appeal in permanent custody cases. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Garber. Mr. Young, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you for your indulgence. I would just reiterate that the point is that there are no claims remaining. The fact that the proceedings continue in juvenile court simply underscores the great difference between juvenile child protection cases and traditional notions of civil litigation. Civil litigation is what Appellate Rule 4B5 was designed to address, not juvenile court. We're dealing with the lives of children, not property rights, et cetera. Contrary to Mr. Garver's assertion, the parties are always informed of their right to appeal following the adjudication of original dispositional order. And Juvenile Rule 34 provides for that, and as you look in the record, it appears in the entry itself. If you open the door pursuant to Appellate Rule 4B5, as the court has questioned, you open the door for all claims, not just perceived errors in admissions, et cetera. Justice O'Donnell, you asked about preservation of evidence. In admissions, the state foregoes putting on all of its evidence and bringing its witnesses in because the parent is willing to agree. And these cases don't last for just 1 or 2 years. It can be several years between the original removal and the final order of permanent custody. If you remove and keep protective supervision based on those admissions, you may later need to remove for 2 years of temporary custody. If you try to then reunify with mom for protective supervision again and it doesn't work out, you're back to temporary custody for another year or two. When you finally get to permanent custody, it's 8 years later, the child wants to get on with its life, and now on appeal, the father wants to say, you know what, way back 8 years ago, I'm not sure you explained me my rights. How is that fair to this child? It's
Counsel,
not.
I have one question to ask. It was suggested that a parent will forego filing an appeal at the adjudicatory hearing for fear that, you know, things, it wouldn't look good. It wouldn't look like they're, cooperating, that there may be some negative impact on the continuing reunification plan, for example. It's my understanding that even if a parent would challenge the adjudicatory hearing at that juncture, which would be the only thing they would have to challenge, there still is the obligation for the agency that maintains the temporary custody of the child to, put forth a plan and have the parents participate. Is that correct?
Absolutely. Just because an appeal is taken, it does not divest juvenile court of jurisdiction to entertain the activities that aren't related to that specific order under appeal. And the fact that these types of appeals are expedited in nature, and the fact that the reunification services would be ongoing, would allow the court to fully function in this case, not to the prejudice of any party who desired to maintain a lawful appeal. I think that's a red herring. I also think it's a red herring to suggest that this is a reason parents don't appeal. Appellate Rule 4B5 was developed to clear up some confusion as to appealable orders, not to provide tactical advantage to litigants that would rather wait till later and then resurrect old claims that they never addressed in the first place. I would ask you to disregard the 8th District's rationale in favor of a more reasoned rationale. I would point out that all of the cases cited in favor of this logical assumption of Appellate Rule 4B5 do nothing to analyze 4B5 in detail. They make summary conclusory statements. They don't analyze the strictures of Appellate Rule 4B5, the interlocutory nature, the remaining claims. They don't address that at all. The cases that don't mention it, I think, do it for a reason. It's not applicable.
Thank you, Mr. Young.
Thank you.
The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.